land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the Bayer Museum of Agriculture, and I'm here with Lacey Holting, the executive director. So here we are in Lubbock, and we have the Museum of Agriculture. What an appropriate place, isn't it?
This is a big city, but we are still very much based in and dependent on agriculture.
How did this come about? Why did the museum start?
So back in 1969, a couple of our county commissioners saw how quickly agriculture was changing in their day-to-day job, and they wanted to preserve that history. The transition was happening very quickly, from horse-drawn equipment to small tractors to bigger equipment, more rows, and they asked if they could start collecting some of this through the county. And the commissioner's court started the Lubbock County Historical Collection, and like I said, it sat in storage for 40-plus years.
Wow.
Until some civic leaders actually saw the collection and said, this needs to be in a museum open to the public. And that's where we started in about 2001 as the Agriculture Heritage Museum.
But this is non-governmental, right? It's a non-profit.
Right. It's a non-profit. We're not owned by anyone. We're not part of the university or the city. We're just a private non-profit. And with that collection of farm artifacts, we've really moved and grown and raised a lot of money to build a very nice facility, which we're in now. Completed 2 out of 3 building phases. We have Brazel Hall, which is lots of historical exhibits. That's going to be our antique tractors, horse-drawn equipment. Then we have the central exhibit hall that looks more at all things agriculture, modern agriculture, crops, irrigation. We have a cotton harvest experience where it's like you're actually stripping the cotton.
So you're in the cockpit, right?
Yes, you are the driver. We have some great videos, trivia about what type of food and products come from different major crops grown in the U.S., timelines, historical, where our water comes from. So a lot of major topics in agriculture, both past and present.
And this is as much as for kids as it is for grown-ups.
Yes.
Very hands-on.
Absolutely. One of my favorite things about working here is seeing the conversations. We have a lot of older people that actually come in because they remember using the equipment, the tractors and plows. And then you have the kids that come in who have no idea what those things are, even in the household section, things like hand crank washing machines and those big heavy cast iron irons and skillets, and they're just amazed. I really like that our museum caters to all ages, between the people that experienced it firsthand to some of the interactive, the touchscreens and videos that tell those stories to some of the younger generations. So we are in Central Hall. We're about to walk into the cotton harvest experience. This is one of our favorite exhibits, especially among kids. They absolutely love it. They just run a circle around, seeing when it's their turn again. It's an actual John Deere CS690 cab, and it's surrounded by screens on all three sides, and it looks like you're literally harvesting the crop. There's a great video that plays all about the history of the John Deere cotton strippers. It actually turns at the end of the row, and
they feel like they're driving.
The kids are actually sitting there turning that wheel as fast as possible so they can keep up.
You're going to go ahead and hop in the driver's seat here.
And it gets pretty loud once you get started, but it's all part of the experience.
Mm-hmm. And this is how loud it would sound when you...
Hello there. I wanted to talk to you for a couple of minutes about the history of cotton harvest. First is hand harvesting cotton. The two methods of hand harvesting are picking and pulling.
Right now it's just cotton.
Not that kind.
We're hoping
of
maybe in the future we can do some other crops.
A farmer could harvest.
This is based on an idea from Texas Farm Bureau. They actually had this as a mobile unit. They took to all the stock shows and
module ready to be dropped.
And fairs.
Module ready to be
so we're hoping maybe in the future we could add some additional module crops. But cotton
next
is king
cotton
in West Texas. So this is a harvester reaper that was actually restored by some high school kids, an FFA chapter, Glasscock County, Texas. They put it all together, won some awards, and then we were able to bring it and put it into the actual scene of a wheat field. we're about to add an animatronic Cyrus McCormick that will actually talk to you and tell you about the invention of the Reaper and just how far that advanced agriculture at the time. This is kind of our household rural life exhibit. I show some of the different chores and things you would have done in the house. It ranges from the 20s to the 50s. Right next to us is actually a goat treadmill. You want to talk about animal power. They would put dogs, goats, sheep on it, and it would power small appliances, maybe your washing machine. This one's actually hooked to a washing machine and a butter churn. So any way you could get your chores done faster was an advancement in agriculture and rural America.
Wow, so goat-powered, I love
that. Yes. This wall represents all the different brands of dealerships, tractor dealerships we had just here in Lubbock alone. Anymore, people really think red or green. Used to, there were a lot of other colors. You see yellow and orange, and every type of tractor had its own dealership. So there's seven.
And their own distinct colors.
Oh, yes. And when you have people that restore tractors, they are very particular about that exact color.
So today, green is a big one, huh?
Well, I will say green has supported us very well at this museum. This is one of our rarest or most valuable tractors. It's a Titan tractor. It was kind of a precursor of International Harvester, fully meticulously restored. Just sitting there, it's worth about $250,000. So a lot of collectors would probably be interested in that piece.
That looks like, what, 1910 or something like that?
1915.
Wow.
We're very close. All down this wall, you'll see a lot of harvesting equipment. So wheat harvest, cotton harvesting. Over here is actually a replica of the original McCormick Reaper. For the 100th anniversary, I believe in 1931, the company created, I think, 500 of them, exact replicas of the original wooden Reaper, and gave them out to museums and colleges of agriculture, and we were lucky enough to have one. There's not many still in existence in our...
That's one of the original, the centennial.
Yes, centennial replica, but that one's really popular. I walked past the noisy fan. And then over here looks at cotton harvesting. We actually have some of the very early attempts at cotton stripping by John Deere. This is a number 31. The first one was a number 30. It's a one-row horse-drawn cotton stripper. This is where cotton stripping happened, where John Deere started experimenting with cotton strippers, and these are pretty hard to find as well.
What year is this stripper?
These were made between 32 and 41.
$185.
Yep, $185. And then you see the examples of hand picking, you know, and how you weighed it by the sack. Even our board president says he still remembers as a child hand picking cotton. That's actually a picker, which most of our collection is strippers, but it's kind of neat how the tractor actually turns backwards when it runs.
Wow.
And over here we actually have a big collection of cotton related displays, so you could learn all about how cotton is graded. We have several different brands of historic gins, Munger and Lummis Pratt gin, which I believe was still making equipment into 2012 in Prattville, Alabama.
And these are real antiques. When do they date from?
We actually have a Churka gin, which we know was used, not this particular one, but the technology was used in the 1700s for long staple cotton to help separate the seeds from the fiber. So you go all the way back there. We have a Eagle gin, which is very similar to what Eli Whitney invented.
Here you have kind of an evolution, right?
Yes, it's an evolution from left to right. But yes, the Churka gin, the Eagle gin, you have the Pratt gin, the Munger gin, which was actually based in Dallas. And he was well known for helping to establish the flow of cotton, the efficiency of the flow through the ginning process. There's actually still a place called Munger Place. It's a historic area in Dallas named after him. Lummis is still a huge company and influence in the ginning world, and their company has actually agreed to continue to put the most modern cotton gin they have in our museum. So you really get that transition from historic to modern.
In my mind, this place seems like a great destination, even for farmers and ranchers would love this place, but kids from the city that know nothing about agriculture would probably be totally fascinated.
Absolutely.
To come here.
Absolutely, yes. Like I said, we get visitors of all ages, all generations, and that's why we're working toward a We call it AgWorks. It's a children's ag literacy wing, fourth grade and below, open, great for families where they can come and touch and feel and sit and ride, and they're just encouraged to learn about food and fiber in a play environment.
Okay, one more highlight before we go. Okay. Not to be missed, where would you take me next to see?
Oh, goodness. Well, we have several unique pieces of equipment. One of my favorites, because it just looks very awkward, it's a 1915 Moline Universal tractor. That time period was when they were really trying to convince farmers to go from animal power to a tractor. And the Moline company built this tractor. It was a one-cylinder engine. It was only produced from 1915 to 1917. And they put that engine way up front, about the place where your horse would have been, so the farmer would feel familiar with the setup, and it was set where you could adjust it to fit the implements you already had. This one was restored by several of our volunteers. We have some great volunteers out here, and I just like the look of it. It's interesting. And one more, since we're right here, I have a round cotton bale, and it was ginned in 1929. There's not many of them that still exist. Not many people have seen them. Back when the German textile industry was really big, that was how they wanted cotton transported to Germany. So that was very popular. It weighs about 250 pounds, about half the size of a standard bale. Fit well on the ship, but of course, after the war, that went away.
Before we go, a reason for having so much cotton display here is because right here is probably the epicenter of cotton production today in America, isn't it?
It's a huge cotton region. At one time, about 20% of the nation's cotton was grown within about a 100-mile radius of Lubbock County. Ours is mainly upland cotton, stripper cotton, not picker cotton, so it's a little bit different variety, but yeah, it's a huge part of our culture, our heritage, and still a big part of our economy in the South Plains. My name is Lacey Holting. I'm the Executive Director of the Bear Museum of Agriculture here in Lubbock. If you want more information about our exhibits or when you can come visit us, go to agriculturehistory.org or call us at 806-744-3786. We'd love to see you.
Lacey, thank you so much for sharing. This
You're
is
very welcome.
Great. I'm glad I came here.
We're glad to have you all out.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Lubbock, Texas.
Sand up her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee. Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada. Kim Schneider from Michigan. Elaine Masters in San Diego. Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon. Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansas Songs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
This land was made for you and me.